Now, games are supposed to be fun, but more and more we're seeing aspects of games used in some of the less fun parts of our lives, like work or school or exercise, our finances. And unlike games that are fun, if you lose at these kinds of games, you can face real-world consequences, and you can't just insert another quarter to try again. The idea of gamification has been on the rise since the early 2000s, and our next guest thinks it has positive uses, but it often goes too far. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see examples of gamification in your life? Do you use some kind of app, a language, or exercise, or something like that gives you points or reward streaks or sets you up against other people? How about your workplace? Or have you seen this in a school? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you've encountered this, tell us what you think about it, if it motivates you. Adrian Hahn is the founder and CEO of the game development company Six to Start, creators of the popular mobile fitness app Zombies Run. He's the author of the new book, You've Been Played, How Corporations, Governments, and Schools Use Games to Control Us All. Adrian, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Can you start off with sort of a working definition of gamification? What does it mean?
Yeah, it's basically the use of ideas from game design, like points, badges, leaderboards, missions, that sort of thing, for non-game purposes. So for things like education, health, fitness, anything that isn't just about entertainment.
A lot of your book and a lot of our conversation are going to be about the misuse and abuse of gamification. But you don't think it's necessarily bad in and of itself. You use it, for example, in apps you've created. At best, what can gamification help us do?
Well, I think that gamification can help us achieve things that we know we should be doing or we really want to do, like learn a language or, you know, get fit or just learn new concepts. But we find it kind of difficult to do so or really tough. So I think one really fun game out there is called Kerbal Space Program. And it's all about learning physics and orbital mechanics by launching little creatures into space. And it's very accurate, and it's just a great way of learning science. But also, I think there's all sorts of fitness games. You know, a lot of people play Nintendo's Ring Fit Adventure. I used to play Dance Dance Revolution, you know, when I was a kid. And, you know, a lot of ways to make boring activities a bit more fun.
Now let's stay with those self-improvement apps. I find, you know, I've got a fitness tracker. It gets me out going for walks. I do a language one. It keeps me motivated to keep my streak going to learn a language. That's great. But you say sometimes gamification is misused in those self-improvement apps for a variety of reasons. Where do we start to go wrong with those?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned streaks because I think that's a really powerful motivator for a lot of players. So, you know, a lot of people use Peloton, a lot of people have Apple Watches, and a lot of these are fitness apps and games use streaks to encourage people to work out, you know, 5 days in a row, 10 days in a row, 100 days in a row. You know, you see people showing off their streaks and trying to maintain them even at the expense of their own health. You know, we know that it's not healthy to be exercising when you're ill. Even if you're not ill, it's just good to have rest days when you're running or swimming or cycling. And these streaks, you know, if they're designed in a really simple way, which is how most of them are, if they give people achievements for just working out forever and not taking any rest, they can actually harm you. And that's one example of gamification that is against people's interests.
Talking to Adrian Hahn, his new book is called You've Been Played, How Corporations, Governments, and Schools Use Games to Control Us All. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you use one of these motivational apps that uses leaderboards or streaks, say, or points to reward you and motivate you? Did you? Did you stop? If so, why? And how about at your workplace? Are there competitions, productivity challenges, things like that? What do you think about those? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your experiences or your questions for our guest. Adrian, let's go to work now. You spend a lot of time looking at how companies are gamifying for better and mostly for worse. First of all, what kind of things are out there if people haven't encountered this at work?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's all over the place. I was amazed and kind of disturbed by how frequent it is. So a lot of people work in call centers now or in customer support, and their interactions with customers are timed down to the second. And if they are not, acting well, or if they're not, being polite enough or just responding quickly enough, then they can have points deducted. And they can slip down a leaderboard and not receive achievements. And if they do too badly in this kind of gamified system, then of course they can get punished and get fired. But I think one place which people will be pretty familiar with, one app, is Uber. And a lot of Uber drivers are having their compensation effectively gamified. So periodically, Uber drivers will be invited to choose from different quests. And in these quests, they can sign up to drive 30, 70, 100 trips in a week. And if they achieve the quest, then they get more money. And if they don't, then they lose that. And of course, you could say, well, isn't that a good thing? People like having more money. But if you talk to Uber drivers, which I've done and a lot of people have done, they find it kind of manipulative, because at the end of the day, it's all down to money. And I think they'd rather have more certainty rather than having to hope that they'll be offered these quests and hope that they can really achieve those goals. I think what they'd rather have is just better pay in general. And it's really interesting that they choose to call these things quests, rather than just tasks. And I think part of that is down to the fact that we're all used to thinking that quests and challenges and achievements are good things because we play video games. Everyone plays video games now. And it's really interesting and kind of a bit disturbing to see workplaces take those ideas from video games and try and use them in a way that can exploit people, I think.
Well, and you talk about what ends up being incentivized in that Uber driver's case, and then this can come up with certain truck driver systems too. The incentive might be keep driving, even though you might feel too tired to keep driving. Ultimately, the incentives can lead us in potentially dangerous directions.
Well, exactly. I mean, I people from Uber are on record for saying that they want drivers to drive as much as possible. Obviously, they would say that they don't want people to drive dangerously. At the same time, it's not just quests that Uber uses to try and manipulate people. There's all sorts of things, that tricks in the apps, gamification they use to try and get people to move to different areas of the city or just to drive more. And, I think that these systems can work in incentivizing people through money or just through visuals to try and get them to do more than they wanted to.
Now, you also look at use of these apps in schools, and I'll get to one of those in a minute, but one of the most amazing quotes from your book is a New York Times article about a classroom game app called Class Dojo. A third grader quoting here, "I like it because you get rewarded for your good behavior, like a dog does when it gets a treat." I mean, that third grade kid, he says a lot there.
Yes, this was one of the most eye-opening things I discovered while researching the book. This comes from an app called Class Dojo, which is used in supposedly 95% of US schools, and it's in schools around the world. And it basically does two things. The first thing is pretty simple. It's like a private social network for teachers, students, and parents, and that's fine. But the second thing is basically, it's an app that gives teachers the ability to reward and deduct points from all the students in their class in real time. So they can go and say, oh, if this kid is acting up or being too noisy, minus 10 points. If they're being quiet, if they are doing teamwork, then plus 20 points. And those points can often be traded in for treats. And again, this is not a new thing. We've had points and we've had badges in schools before. But as that kid says, there is something about the kind of continuous nature and also about the way in which this app works just from an audio point of view, which is really interesting and really different. So In Class Dojo, when you get points deducted, you hear the sad sound from the phone, from the teacher's phone. If you get points awarded, you get this happy sound. And the kids obviously associate that, with being trained like a dog. And now, of course, you could say, well, this is good if it keeps a classroom under control, but really, is this the way that we want kids to learn in school, to be motivated in school? And I think that's a big question. Some people might say, actually, that's fine as long as kids behave. But I'm sure that a lot of parents would think otherwise.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Peter is with us in Racine. Peter, what did you want to tell us about?
So, I actually work as a software developer for a manufacturing company, and we use scoreboards like this, the gamification, to motivate workers and to try and, have them work off of each other. It isn't used to alter their pay or anything like that. It's just used to evaluate and address issues where performance does fall or where performance is exceptional. It's one of those things where, in my opinion at least, it's all about the ethics of how it's implemented. You don't want to do exactly what Uber's doing and encourage bad behavior or discourage good behavior because of the way your algorithms report on performance. But it can be used very constructively, at least in my experience.
And Peter, can I ask, how long has this been in place at your workplace?
Some of the scoreboards have been in place for 8 to 10 years now, and some of them we are implementing. It just, every time we find a place where we can utilize it, it's great, but you have to be able to compare people on very even terms, and when you have different roles that don't mesh with each other, it's very hard to compare them.
Interesting.
So
Peter, thanks so much for sharing that with us. Adrian, what do you think of Peter's example?
well, I think it's really interesting because we've always had examples of giving feedback to workers in workplaces. And I think that makes a lot of sense. People want to know when they're doing well and when they're doing poorly. And it can be nice having that feedback in real time. I think it really depends on scale. It's hard for me to know whether one case or another case is done well. Certainly in some big organizations, one of the problems that we have with these gamified workplaces is that the only way you get feedback is through this computerized system, this gamified system, and there is no way really to talk to a manager. And it is being done in such a kind of fine-grained surveillance way that even if you slip up once, then that's it. And so that's obviously, I think most people would agree, that's just too cruel. Now, I think there are ways to do this in a way that isn't that doesn't punish people so much, but it really comes down to those rewards and punishments. If the punishment for slipping up a couple of times is you're fired or you're docked pay, then that's too much. But if it's just, hey, we're going to have a chat, then that's probably okay.
Thanks a lot for sharing that with us, Peter. We're talking to game designer Adrian Hahn about his new book on gamification. It's called You've Been Played: How Corporations, Governments, and Schools Use Games to Control Us All. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you, like Peter, have something like this going on at your workplace? What do you think about it? How about in your school or your child's school? Have you used Class Dojo or some other behavior reward app like that? What do you think about that? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with Adrian Hahn, founder and CEO of the game development company Six to Start. His new book is called You've Been Played: How Corporations, Governments, and Schools Use Games to Control Us All. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions or to share your encounters with streaks or points or leaderboards at your work, your school, your exercise app, you name it. 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Kevin is on the line in Janesville. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm a teacher. I have used these points-based systems with students on multiple occasions. Honestly, I do not like them. I think they are teaching kids the wrong idea of doing things for points or for not losing points. And until they internalize that this positive effort leads to positive consequence, they're a very poor crutch. Thank you.
Kevin, thanks for sharing that. Adrian, that gets to the heart of a big question here for students and others. What is our motivation? What should our motivation be for doing something like behaving and learning in school?
Well, exactly. I mean, I think, you know, he's drawing a distinction between extrinsic and intrinsic motivation, you know, where extrinsic motivation would be just trying to get someone to do something by effectively, you know, bribing or rewarding them with sweets or points or trinkets. And, you know, intrinsic motivation, you know, is where we want kids to learn English or learn science because they find it interesting or they find it, you know, engaging or they find it, you know, beautiful. And of course, you know, it's not always the case that kids are going to pick up on that immediately. And it's difficult to do that if you've got, you know, a huge class and you don't have a lot of time to prepare. So I do sympathize, you know, with teachers who do, you know, end up using ClassDojo. I think a lot of them probably would prefer not to. And I think it's a weird situation where I think some kids and some parents actually expect ClassDojo to be used in some places. But, you know, the problem is if you rely on it too much, then the only thing that the kids are trying to do is maximize points. And, you know, that only works for so long.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. Wendy joins us now in New Berlin. Wendy, hi.
Hello, Kevin. You just summed up exactly how I feel. I'm a retired teacher, and I got my degree in the 70s, and I think that makes a difference. So I found so many teachers doing these money programs or tokens, and I didn't do it. In fact, I fought against it by doing things like I would bring in a whole tray of chocolate chip cookies. And my students would be like, whoa, what do we do? You know, and I'd say nothing. I just like you. And that was hard for them to get. It's really, I think it's really seriously a problem. It's scary to me how children are being manipulated. And it is much easier for the teacher, but good luck trying to break that system.
Wendy, thanks for the call. Well, for somebody like Wendy at a school, at a, you know, making decisions at a workplace, you name it, how do you break out of that gamification, negative gamification mentality, Adrian?
I think it's tricky because obviously, you know, if you're just one teacher in a school and you've got, you know, a lot of obligations, it's hard to sort of swim against the tide. Especially, of course, if you're a worker in, you know, Amazon, or if you're a driver at Uber, you know, maybe you don't have a lot of power there. You know, I think as individuals, then, you know, we can try and push back against gamification when we encounter it in our own lives and just be aware of when we're being gamified. I mean, to take, for example, I've got an Apple Watch, and every month it tells me to try and beat my previous month's calorie goal. which is, as you can imagine, it gets increasingly difficult to do that to a point where it's impossible. And it's okay to just turn that off, right? You know, if you see that in your life, if you have an app like Duolingo or you have a watch that says, hey, please try and do more, you can just turn that off because that's not something that you're asking for. I think in schools, yeah, you know, I think I love that note by Wendy talking about just, hey, I'm just giving you these cookies because I like you, rather than, you know, it's a reward or a punishment. And, you know, that's something I try to do in my own workplace, you know, with my employees. I think people like getting positive feedback and they like getting, you know, learning about ways to improve. At the same time, I don't want to be in a situation where I'm just doling out points and badges every, you know, few minutes or every hour, as actually happens in some workplaces now. So, you know, if you're in a position of influence, then you can try and change things. If you're just someone who, if you're someone who works at a workplace, then you can ask them to change. But in your own life, I think there are places you can turn off gamification if you can.
Wendy, thanks for that call. I also accept chocolate chip cookies, if you like the show. Adrian, you're pitching messages to different audiences here. I want to focus on one: people who design apps and programs and workplace reward systems. What kind of ethical considerations do you want those people to have in mind as they design and then implement these kind of gamified setups?
Well, you know, I have a few different sort of like guidelines for how people can do it well. One guideline that I've mentioned before is really try and keep the rewards and punishments small, right? It's just not, it's not a good system if the punishment is you're fired or you're fined $10,000. It just makes people terrified, to be honest. It's not really a good motivator. And similarly, if you have a prize of $1 million, you know, $10,000 or free college or that sort of thing as the result of performing well in a gamified system, the people are just going to manipulate that. They're going to burn themselves out. They're going to cheat. It's not a way to motivate desirable behavior. I think another thing to do when designing these systems is ultimately to try and keep the customer or the players or the users' best interests at heart. And that is very hard to do. And sometimes, you know, people might say that's paternalist, but, you know, that's something that we just try to do in our own games. We try to think, look, how can we design this in a way that people are not going to be unhappy at us for making them overexercise or unhappy at us at spending more money than they wanted to? And sometimes that can go against the profit motive, and that's just something you're going to have to decide. And not every designer can make that decision, but you can voice your opposition.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Adrian Hahn. His new book is called You've Been Played: How Corporations, Governments, and Schools Use Games to Control Us All.